Hanoi when his plane was shot down. Not a pure victim, okay? But victimized when he was in prison there. So everybody will tell their story, right? And we'll find some sense of proportion. Maybe we won't agree, but we'll have a portrait like South Africa had of its apartheid era, right? A picture of what it looked like. And maybe everyone then can find relative accountability and responsibility and take responsibility for what we did wrong. We have a hard time saying we're wrong in the face of this kind of notion that the American military was right in Vietnam all these years later, or right to go into Iraq. Look what we've wrought. So I think there's a lot of creative ideas that we could have here that apportion responsibility and don't leave any of us as innocents, and yet still put the weight of corporate military authority at the forefront. So thanks, everybody. Let's keep talking after this. Appreciate the conversation.
We've been listening to a discussion that was recorded at the Oregon Country Fair this year. It featured Bernadette Dorn, Jeff Jones, and Bill Ayers. Stay right here at KBOO for Air Cascadia. It'll be followed by Flashpoints at 10:15. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, August 27th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We have some great guests today. Dr. Carolyn Carlson is going to be joining us to talk about the scary creep of government intrusion into the activities of journalists. Very, very important issue. We don't yet have an update from Nada Ilya on the Black the Boat blockade. They're all part of the sanctions and the movement to stop Israel's violence against the Palestinians. We have what they describe is certainly not any kind of peace agreement, but it is a ceasefire. How long Israel will honor that, and what types of provocative actions Israel will take to shatter the fragile ceasefire, we don't know yet, but we can safely say that something will come, because Israel won't stop until they've obliterated the Palestinian people, which is what they feel is necessary to set up something like an Israeli state. So we will be speaking with activists here on this side of the Great Water. We have protesters who locked themselves to pipeline trucks in opposition of Enbridge. This is the Line 6B pipeline. Originally, some of this terminology was confusing. Most people knew about the Keystone XL, but Line 6B, what the hell's that? Well, now, alas, or perhaps this is a good thing, it probably is, many more people have become familiar and acquainted with some of this terminology. Activists from the Michigan Coalition Against Tar Sands chain themselves to the pipeline trucks. This is a Precision Pipeline. And don't forget, too, this is Precision Cast Parts, I believe. I did a little bit of research on this. It's hard sometimes to trace all of the connections, but Precision Cast Parts builds these things. And guess where Precision Cast Parts is located? That's right. Right here in Cascadia, right here, close by Portland, Oregon. We're going to be speaking today with Duncan Tarr and Dylan Okealagoka, both of the Michigan, both of them there are Michigan residents and organizers of a group called Michigan Coalition Against Tar Sands, or MECATS. They have taken a truly radical step, another example of direct action that works to halt Enbridge's expansion of Line 6B. And we're fortunate to be able to speak with both of them today. Good morning, Duncan. We've got Dylan, too. Good morning, Dylan.
Good morning.
Hi, could each of you say your name so that listeners can identify your voices, because it's radio, you know?
Sure. My name's Duncan.
Dylan?
And I'm Dylan.
Okay, so you did this extraordinary move. You've been involved with this. Talk a little bit about your involvement. You're pretty young guys. Your involvement and commitment, because it takes a certain degree of commitment. We always ask ourselves, how far would we have to be pushed before we would really put our freedom on the line? You do give up a huge amount of your own personal life when you get involved in direct action that really works on the front line. So what is it about this particular issue, the tar sands pipelines and so forth, that moved you to take these really radical steps?
Sure. Well, I mean, for me personally, growing up, spending a lot of time outdoors, you know, hiking, canoeing, and like not even seeing that we need all this beautiful environment to live as humans, but also all the life out there is beautiful too. And then you see a company like Enbridge, which is the exact opposite of all that, and is like the epitome of the destruction of all this life. And they're taking what is beautiful about the world and what it has on the extraction sites in Alberta, Canada, these sacrifice zones where they're clear cutting and then ripping up all the land, or whether it's spilling in Michigan, a million gallons in the Kalamazoo River, to the sacrifice zones in Detroit, the Marathon Refinery. They have a hand in every step of the way of destroying our planet.
You talk about the term sacrifice zones. That's a very frightening. That's a frightening term. Talk a bit more about what we are really talking about when we talk about sacrifice zones.
Sure. So the term is basically an area that is literally sacrificed for, in this case, Enbridge Corporation. So, like Marathon Refinery in Detroit, for example, the third most polluted zip code in the country, meaning that this small area has been sacrificed to the pollution and to the profit of this massive corporation. In the same way that First Nation communities are being sacrificed in what's called Canada, in the same way that their lands and their well-being are being stolen from them.
Who makes these decisions? Who decides, okay, this community is going to be declared a sacrifice zone? These are all communities. These are places where people are generally not well off, and pretty much anybody who is well off fights these things. That's the interesting socioeconomic factor behind it. So they may seem apathetic and say, well, sacrifice zone, doesn't matter, all that. But if it came to their property, it would be a different story, it would seem. So who decides what communities are essentially going to be poisoned to death by the activities of corporations like Enbridge?
Well, I'll touch on this briefly, and then I'll let Dylan talk. But what is especially angering for me, and a lot of these times, these are people of color in these communities, like First Nations, so Indigenous communities, or lower class communities in the Detroit area. But what's especially, I think, something that we can unite around in Enbridge is that they really don't make the distinction. For example, like small landowners in other parts of the state, Enbridge comes in and takes their land and chops down their trees. And these are people that come from very different backgrounds, but still are so angry at this one company that is destroying all of our land.
Yeah, no way. People weren't expecting this. Go ahead, Dylan. I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about the action that MeCats is up to. What you're doing is really extraordinary, and there's a network, there's a family, a community of people across the country who are increasingly deciding that it is more important to do these, stand up for what they believe in. And what they can do to protect what's left of our environment. Not much, alas, but could talk a bit about MeCats and your organization. We want to also let listeners know, go to the website. The pictures are extraordinary, and they're just wonderful. And the website also is a place where you can donate to help out with legal costs and so forth, and keep the organizations like this up and running in the name of all of a future for all of us. So talk a bit about MeCats and what you've been doing. How long have you been doing this?
Okay, definitely. Thank you, Chris. I was raised, a single mother, low income, and it really gave me perspective on life. You know, materials never really were a big thing, and I really had an appreciation for relationships with people, on the human level and the environment. You know, I was in high school when 2010 Kalamazoo spill happened, and I have family in Kalamazoo. And I remember, being, very, very worried for their safety and their health. And as the years passed, I learned more and more about, affected communities and families that were devastated by this spill. Roughly 1 million gallons of toxic tar sands were dumped into the Kalamazoo River. And according to the EPA, there's still 200 to 300,000 gallons in that river, but it's reopened for public use. And I just remember the specific instance with this hearing about this resident who he hadn't smoked a cigarette and smoked a day in his life. And about a year or two after the spill, he started having breathing problems. He went to the doctor, and doctor said his lungs looked like he'd been smoking for 50 years, and he had developed emphysema. And so that really hit home for me, seeing someone who lives an hour or 2 hours west of me, being directly hurt by Enbridge oil and their lack of safety and disregard. So I was doing research and learning more and more, and I finally got involved at an action in Detroit, the Draw the Line, that 350 and MeCats organized. MeCats is a Detroit coalition against tar sands, who work mainly in Detroit around the Marathon oil refinery and 48217, which is,
that's their most ground zero for the...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was actually looking at a quote in your statement on the website that was really moving. At one time, in the world, there were woods that no one owned. Now our planet has been bought up. Privatization is part of this whole thing, too. Do you want to... We've got about a minute left, and I want to make sure that people are able to find a website, link to your website, and we'll put that information on the KABU website as well. But if you want to give listeners that info before we let you go, I still want you to talk more, a little bit more, about what you're saying and about the value of your action and the value of the environment and what you're doing to protect that.
Certainly. So those factors that you said there are, really the reasons behind, why I chose to stand up and do this. I can't stand by and allow, foreign fossil fuel corporations to profit and exploit people and the environment just to make money and just to, just to better themselves in a monetary way. Our planet does not have monetary value. Life and, the ecosystem isn't exploitable. And, you know, these things and, you know, the climate really made me do it. This urgency is now, we need to move past talking about these things and analyzing the potential harms of the climate and what's happening, and start acting upon it and stop allowing these people and corporations to profit over.
I think if people your age, people who are so articulate and so willing to do go the distance in these things, it's helpful. Just before we let you go, quickly, if you could give us the website.
It's MyCats, MICATS. I think it's mycats.org, but if you just punch MyCats into Google, it's the first search, unless Duncan knows the actual handle.
Yeah, and the pictures are there, the stories there, and ways to donate and get involved, and so that we all stand in solidarity here across the country, arm in arm, linked to stop companies like Enbridge. This has been Air Cascadia. I want to just identify my guest. I've been speaking with Duncan Tarr and with Dylan Oklala Gorka of MyCats, and I want to thank them very much for joining us today. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, August 26, 2014. Tammy Dean engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Guantanamo Bay Prison Camp and the Louisiana State Prison at Angola, known as The Farm, both iconic images of the brutality prisoners can find locked up in the United States. Guantanamo still holds 149.